Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Say it with me. Stop the stops!
You meant to get that taillight repaired, and now you're pulled over facing more serious charges. Is it effective policing or unfair targeting? The NAACP demands to stop the stops.
Mayor Larson!
Stop the stops!
Michael Tuscan!
Stop the stops!
Plus, she's one of the breakout performers from Duluth, back on stage again, at her own pace. We'll catch up with Rachel Kilgore. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
She's one of the breakout performers from Duluth, back on stage again, at her own pace. We'll catch up with Rachel Kilgore. But first...
Say it with me. Stop the stops!
You meant to get that taillight repaired, and now you're pulled over facing more serious charges. Is it effective policing or unfair targeting? The NAACP demands to stop the stops.
Mayor Larson!
Stop the stops!
Michael Tuscan!
Stop the stops!
I'm angry.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Last Saturday, the Duluth branch NAACP held a rally at the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial calling for local police departments to end the use of the pretextual stop. You may not have heard of that term, but almost every driver is familiar with the practice or nervous about it. An officer pulls you over for a minor infraction, like a broken taillight, and then begins questioning you or searching the vehicle for evidence of a more serious crime. The NAACP cites a disproportionate number of arrests of people of color and indigenous people, suggesting the tactic is unfairly imposed based on race, as well as on poor people who may not be able to afford to fix those taillights. The rally coincided and joined with a women's march that day and attracted a larger-than-normal crowd to the memorial, including national and regional civil rights activists from the NAACP and other groups. I spoke with the local branch president, Classy Dudley, and NAACP researcher Jamie Sharp shortly after the event. Here's our conversation.
We are speaking with
Classy Dudley, president of the Duluth branch NAACP.
Jamie Sharp, the chair of the Criminal Justice Committee of the NAACP.
So, stop the stop. Tell us about that. What is it?
Ever since March, when we made our first press conference, we were talking about different disparities within policing, and one that was very alarming was the arrest of the stops, and not just stopping while driving, but also stopping people of color while they're walking and while they're sitting and just chilling in public areas. And it was, these disparities were so grave that we've been working with people all across the states and in Superior about ending pretextual stops, which is, Jamie, you want to explain what pretextual stops are?
A pretextual stop is essentially when officers use smaller infractions that don't harm public safety, such as a license plate light that is out, or something hanging from the rearview mirror, or expired tabs. So things that are not moving violations, things that, you know, they're not going to cause somebody to get into a car accident or anything like that. And they use those things as reasons to pull people over. And then once they pull people over, they can search their vehicles, they can do really whatever they want with them, they can try to find other crimes to accuse them of, and also that's when a lot of dangerous situations arise with law enforcement too. But we found in Duluth that 18% of the traffic stops over a 6-month period were people of color, while they only make up about 8 to 10% of Duluth, depending on the census data that you look at. So we saw there was disparity, but
well, and previously you were on with us, and you were speaking with Superior Police Chief Nick Alexander about data showing the use of force of both police departments to be disproportionately higher when the person is a person of color.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. When we're looking at Duluth and Superior, the use of force rates are so disproportionately affecting people of color. We are really nervous and want to make sure that we're limiting these unnecessary interactions with law enforcement on the side of the road that can become extremely dangerous. But I really want to emphasize, it's not just about this data. You know, hard data might be a good headline, but the truth is that these are stories that people bring to us. People call up this branch of the NAACP, all of our committee members, and we're sitting there saying, what should we work on? People start telling us stories about their kid getting stopped when they're walking home from Super One, when they're getting pulled over because they have a small angel hanging from the mirror, the rearview mirror of their car with their kids in the back seat. And those are the stories that we do not want to hear and that make people afraid to live in both of these towns in the Twin Ports and the greater Arrowhead region and northern Wisconsin. So that's really why we took on the Stop the Stops campaign.
I don't want to diminish the racial aspect because it is the NAACP, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what your primary mission is. That being said, you know, would white motorists want to have pretextual stops used against them? I mean, is that not a concern for them too?
Oh, absolutely, it's a concern. And what it is that pretextual stops is also a direct attack on people who are poor. I mean, they're pulling people over for a taillight out or a cracked windshield, something that if they're giving a ticket for, and then if they can't pay the ticket, then their license is suspended, and that leads to arrest rates, and it's affecting people at disproportionate rates. But this isn't just an issue of color, it's an issue of poor. They're criminalizing poverty at this case. It's disgusting.
One thing, going, I guess, back to race, the person did pay for all these things was Philando Castile. Mm-hmm. And I reported on that, and I looked up his record immediately. He lit up like a Christmas tree, and that's actually what the officers mm-hmm. saw when they pulled him over. But when you look closely, they all were for minor infractions. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing was he actually kept paying to get his license reinstated. But you tell me.
And one nuance I do want to point out is it is a poor tax. However, one piece of rhetoric that I think is often used that we need to be wary of is I think police departments will say, oh, we don't have a problem with black people. It's an issue with poor people, and this is why they're being affected more. And it just so happens that more black people are poor because of other systemic issues. And I think what I want to make clear in this interview is that national data shows is that even though use of force, traffic stops, all of these things are both disproportionate towards people of color and poor people. One thing that when you aggregate that data, you see is that actually in all socioeconomic classes, people of color are more disproportionate than white people. So poor black people are, you know, more often experiencing these things than poor white people. So yes, it is a class issue. Mm-hmm. It is a socioeconomic thing, but we cannot get out of talking about race by saying that.
Let's look at the police side, if you will. Pretextual stops didn't just start out of the blue, mm-hmm. and there's a reason for them. There are probably some, I'm sure, if we, you know, Googled about 30 seconds, we could find a case where the pretextual stop yielded like a major drug bust or something mm-hmm. like that. It turned out there was a whole bunch of, a brick of heroin in the trunk. So if you took that away, are you taking away a legit police tool?
Absolutely not. In the Twin Ports, it's less than 2% of the traffic stops that actually lead to a bigger arrest. If you're looking at the other 98% of people who are getting pulled off, it's a tax on the poor. It's criminalizing being poor. And there's nothing more to it. There's other safe ways of measuring safety and public safety besides pretextual stops.
And I think that's more anecdotal data that actually someone of the police department told us when we've been having these conversations.
We asked 2%.
Yeah, they just kind of said, we asked them, oh, well, in your career as a police officer, how often were these stops effective for you? And he said, oh, you know, maybe 2% of the time, if even. And, you know, we've been having these conversations with them. The other day, one of them at the police department said that they agree. If someone's getting pulled over for license plate lights out on Central Entrance at 5 p.m., they don't agree with that. But they keep coming back to this, and they've said this word for word, this back alley situation at 3 in the morning where they've heard reports of crime, and then the person's license plate is out, and because of that, if we change this law, they won't be able to do something about that person. And to me, you know, we asked them, we said, can we write this policy together? Can we write this ordinance together that will account for the nuances that you face as law enforcement? And they were unable to answer that question. Mm-hmm. They talked around it. They have been making it very clear that they're very unwilling to do anything about the discretion that they have to pull people over for these really absurd reasons.
Isn't that part of it too? So if you allow that 3 o'clock in the morning somebody's doing something, you need some reason, because you really do suspect something bad is happening, right, to confront them. But you just said discretion. Is that to suggest that they could use discretion and not pull you over for the broken taillight on Central Entrance at 2 p.m?
Exactly. It's picking and choosing when they can criminalize and what they can criminalize that disproportionately affects people of color. We very blatantly said that this is a system of white supremacy that we need to eradicate. And like Jamie said, there has been no movement forward on how we are helping these people. And as we go on, this is still continuing. And we shouldn't have to wait for us to feel safe walking down the streets, to be safe driving. But as we wait on people who are in power to make any of those decisions, people here are still suffering. And that's the big issue here.
It just shows, I think, it's such a clear disconnect with the people who are in power with these police departments and what's really going on the ground. We had a similar situation, and I tell the story not because I want to claim malintent by anyone we were having the conversation with, but we had a member of our executive committee, or actually our criminal justice committee, join us with the police department the other day and tell her story of getting pulled over because of an angel, little angel that was hanging from her mirror with her brown kids in the backseat with her. And when you know, telling the story how terrified she was, being vulnerable, multiple people who were representing the police department responded by telling us that they also still feel uncomfortable when they're pulled over by police officers. And I understand.
Well, does anyone feel comfortable being pulled over by a police officer?
And I understand the empathy that they're trying to show maybe through saying that, but it's such a disconnect because I think that they're trying to level with the experience of this woman of color, who there's such a power dynamic at play in that moment that is so much greater than just police officer and civilian because of the history that's occurred during these traffic stops. And you know, I think they meant the best by saying what they did, but to me it just showed how deep the disconnect is, and that empathy on its own without compassion and criticism, I don't think we'll solve it.
So lastly, for your program, your campaign, Stop the Stop, what's been the reaction from the city and from the police in general, police department in particular, actually?
Well, quite frankly, the police and the people in power haven't done anything, and that's why we wanted to start this campaign, Stop the Stop. We're done talking, because quite frankly, we've been having these meetings, we have been sitting down, there's been no action, so we're hoping to mobilize.
That's with Duluth, right? You haven't talked to Superior.
No, we haven't talked to Superior yet, but we're coming for them. And we're ready, we're mobilized, we're energized, we're taking that same energy with people who mobilized around George Floyd, and we're working to use that campaign to stop the stops. We gotta end this, we gotta let people live and not just survive.
And I just wanna add, like, I did have that conversation with Chief Alexander in Superior on your last show, and he showed an incredible amount of humility that we're hoping to see from Duluth as well. And he'd already run this data himself before that we even brought it up. So I think
that showed the disproportionate use of force being higher against people of color and indigenous people.
And he admitted it on the air. So I was incredibly impressed by his humility, and we're excited to start talking with them to find meaningful policy action changes that we can try to push through in both cities in the Twin Ports and the greater region here. Because there are people of color that live everywhere up here, and they need to make sure that they're not afraid when they're behind the wheel of their car.
We have been speaking with Classy Dudley, president of the Duluth branch NAACP, and Jamie Sharp, the data cruncher for the branch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin.
The NAACP expressed concerns about the stops in Superior as well, though they did not research specific data in that department. And as you heard from our previous show about the disproportionate use of force against Indigenous residents and people of color, NAACP researcher Jamie Sharp reports a good relationship with Superior Police Chief Nick Alexander. Chief Alexander is away. As for Duluth, we contacted its police department to hear directly about their pretextual stop policy. In an email, Public Information Officer Maddie Jelseth declined comment, stating, quote, "The Duluth Police Department has been and continues to have discussions with the NAACP. These discussions are still ongoing, so we won't be providing any further comments at this time," close quote. A longtime police chief who is available to talk about the practice is Cedric Alexander, a nationally recognized public safety expert and formerly chief of police in Rochester, New York, and DeKalb County, Georgia, which contains part of Atlanta. He also has served on the federal level as federal security director for the Transportation Security Administration. He joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Cedric Alexander.
Thank you.
So how effective are stops from a police perspective? Meaning, how often do they lead to finding something that would not have been found if you didn't have the pretext of a broken taillight or something like that?
Part of the problem that's taking place in our environment and our society and policing at this moment is that people don't trust the reasoning for the stop. Certainly, police departments across the country require police to enforce traffic laws around speeding, traffic laws around broken taillights, traffic laws around a variety of different things in which police are given the authority to stop and investigate and make a decision, a discretionary decision on their own, whether they want to cite or ticket or not. But here's what has taken place. We've seen these escalations and concerns of these pretextual stops. And there's the science that even shows, even where you have a small number of people of color or indigenous people that live in those communities, their numbers are much higher than the majority population. Now we have to ask ourselves, how is that so? These pretextual stops have to be done for the right reasons and the right reasons only. So if I pull you over, Robin, because of a broken taillight, I ask for your driver's license, registration, insurance, etc., whatever's relevant for your state, you give me that, then that's my focus. Unless something is really very glaring to me that may involve me going further into my investigation, I don't need to pull you over and ask you, do you have drugs in the car? Do you have this in the car? Do you have that in the car? If that's not a question you're asking each and every individual in each and every part of your communities, then we got to revisit that type of investigation, because it clearly suggests that we're not applying public safety equally and equitably.
I'm intrigued with what you said about asking everybody you pull over if do you have drugs in the car, or I guess something like did you kidnap that person next to you, right? Because
that's right.
Those are the things you want
that's
to
right.
find out. We're hearing anecdotally that pretextual stops do work. Now, what percentage of the time, I don't know. That's a little fuzzy. But in Wisconsin in particular, again, this is anecdotal, we do have Wisconsin has a relationship with alcohol that is well known. And the pretextual stop is used to pull somebody over who is actually not weaving along the road, but you know, they do suspect. Likewise, again, anecdotally, the NAACP reports, this is secondhand, that the Duluth police have told them, well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, if we get a call about a suspect and we've got no other reason to pull somebody over, that's why we need this. So, you know, as a chief and as an officer way back when, is it a useful tool for real reasons?
Here's the problem, Robin, with that. If I'm going to do a pretextual stop to give me what I need to further produce some reasonable cause or probable cause to further investigate, right? It's got to be consistent across the board, period. communities right now, many communities in this country, particularly communities of color and particularly indigenous populations and poor whites and people in general, they don't feel a sense of confidence that you're doing it for the right reason. Everyone wants police officers to be able to utilize whatever tools as they can that are legal, moral, ethical, in order to provide good public safety. But you've got to be able to demonstrate that across all sides of town, because people on high-end sides of town drive intoxicated just like people on the low-end side of town. People at 2 o'clock in the afternoon can drive inebriated just like someone 3 o'clock in the morning. So we have to be very careful here that if police are going to do these pretextual stops, it requires that your community have a level of trust that you're doing it for the right reasons and you're doing it consistently with all populations.
We've been speaking with Cedric Alexander, a nationally recognized public safety expert and formerly chief of police in Rochester, New York, and in DeKalb County, Georgia. He also has served as federal security director for the Transportation Security Administration. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Robin, for having me on.
Coming up, Rachel Kilgore returns to the stage.
Patience and prayer with her hand in my hair.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The last time we checked in with singer-songwriter Rachel Kilgore, it was in May 2020, during what we thought was then the height of the pandemic, and like every other musician at that time, she had come in from the road. She was spending that time staying safe, of course, and just getting things done outside of music. I think there was a house to rehab. And with her successes, she could afford to. She's clearly one of the Twin Ports A-listers, as I like to say, having broken out beyond the area, particularly in Boston, and collecting more than a few music awards along the way. And now she's performing on stage again, and even locally, with a concert tomorrow night, Saturday, at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Rachel Kilgore.
Thank you, Robin. I'm glad to be back.
We're glad to have you back, even though you weren't very far away that whole time. So.
No, I haven't really gone anywhere.
And did I remember correctly, you were fixing up a house?
Yeah, my partner and I have a house actually here in the Duluth Hillside, and it is very large, and we are still working on it.
Yeah, you could be doing this for the next 10, 20 years if you want.
That's true, really. Yes, it's all about how much time we want to put in up front and how long we want it to last.
If it's anywhere in Duluth, and you said the Hillside or Superior for that matter, I think the housing stock is even older.
Yeah.
It is old and you can do as much as you want forever on it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you're not kidding. We just the other night, we just tore down a ceiling just to see what was going on. Yeah, our house is about 120 years old, and it has some sagging pieces, you know, centers of the house, and just trying to figure out how everything is held up together and upright.
Yep. I will tell you something that you've already found out. There are no right angles in Duluth.
Yes, that's very true. Very true.
So if you go to Home Depot or Menards or whatever, and you're looking for a door, it's not going to fit.
No.
I'm going to tell you that right now.
No. I just installed a whole lot of new windows, and none of them fit quite right, actually.
So it inspires your creativity, and he said, trying to segue to music here. Have you been spending this time writing, composing?
I have a little bit. I think, honestly, for a lot of the time during the shutdown, I was working on the house, and I was plugging into some community projects, some like community engagement things here in the Hillside, which has felt really great. And I have definitely kept up doing music. I have some friends that, you know, just jumped right in and wrote three albums or something during the
right.
pandemic.
Yeah, we've had a few of those seriously on the show, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I did not do that. I have really slowly been working on a songwriting project about my dad that is near completion, and I am negotiating the recording of it. Hopefully, actually, I'm looking at recording in Canada. My dad was a Canadian, and I'm a dual citizen, and I just thought that it would be fun in honor of him to return up there with the songs. And obviously I would tour it around everywhere, but I think it would be kind of fun to work up there with some of my friends, fellow artists, and and then also I did just try and play a little tour in August. My booking agent was really amazing throughout the pandemic. The agency I work for, Fleming Artists, was really on the forefront of booking virtual shows, and not just, you know, obviously anyone can put their own virtual show on, but they were doing such a good job of pairing artists with venues and putting on ticketed virtual shows and figuring out ways for everyone to maintain some kind of income. And we had weekly Zoom meetings together. They were very they were just on it, and we took a leap and booked some actual shows for August, thinking like that's way far in advance, August 2021.
Right, right.
And I did about 3 weeks of shows in like Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and I had a really wonderful time playing for people. But of course, it's still quite awkward. I don't know when it's going to not feel awkward, but
right.
I was grateful that all the venues I played at had some kind of COVID regulation. It felt good to be out again, but I do think I'm probably going to hold off before hitting the road big time.
Well, August was the time that we thought it was kind of ending, right? Of course, August before that, we thought it was ending in the fall of 2020. It didn't happen. Well, we were waiting for the vaccine, and right. I don't have to tell you, you lived it. We all lived it.
But yeah, I'm not really playing any other shows this month, and I'm back at home working on the house, and it felt good to do something in Duluth. It feels like Sacred Heart has a lot of personal meaning for me, and also is large. It feels like, you know, we can have, hopefully we can safely gather there with a moderate sized crowd, and they're also going to be streaming the show, so that people don't feel safe coming out. We're definitely encouraging people to watch the YouTube live stream from home if that feels better to them.
And how do we watch the YouTube live show?
You can find it either on Sacred Heart has its own YouTube channel or on my channel. Wait, Rachel, I don't know what it is. How do you find it? You just go to YouTube and you look up my name.
Actually, I'm looking it up right now, and that's exactly what you do. And I guess we should spell your name right. It's Rachel Kilgore, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, Kilgore, K-I-L-G-O-U-R. Sacred Heart is at sacredheartmusic.org. We are speaking with Twin Ports singer-songwriter and local girl made good, can I say that, Rachel Kilgore, ahead of her performance tomorrow night, Saturday night, at Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. So, let's hear something.
I think I might have had you play this last time, but I've been thinking about it a lot. The song Garden from Game Changer feels a lot like, sometimes I think at this pandemic that I wished it into reality, not the pandemic itself and the grief and trauma that comes with a pandemic, but the me staying home for the first time in a long time, and just being a person in a community and in a house.
Sure. Here is Garden by Rachel Kilgore.
One, two. Thank you.
should I start successful? Not the status, the wealth, but my passion, my health successful. Heart of a nation's pride, never be said.
Was Garden by Rachel Kilgore, our guest, speaking to us from her home where she's been holed up, actually not quite holed up, fixing it up and holding up the ceiling for the last pandemic period. You mentioned that you had sent us Garden before, and you know what? We may have played it before, and we had a great realization with, I think it was One Less Guest, that we played the same song and their two different appearances, and we thought, well, you know what? You can actually do that. It's not like there's a law saying once you play their song, you can't play it again. And secondly, any of you listeners out there who are concerned about this, yeah, call us up and complain. We love that kind of call, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right. Yes, you're right. That's how you know an independent musician when you see one. That's not how it works in pop music. If you want to be a big hit maker, you play that song as often as possible.
You know what? Let's play Garden again. No. Yeah. but I believe we did play Game Changer. Usually the last song we play part of it because we have to play out till the break or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we may not have played all of Game Changer. And let's hear it now. But before we do, there are violins all over this, which is nice. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And I have to say, and I said this to you once before, I remember you as a violinist. And I still have this memory in my head of you offering violin lessons, like as part of a silent auction of somebody's. And I wanted to do it, but you said, nope, not you. Galen Lee did have violin lessons. I was like her second student. I was probably her worst student. And then she got famous and she didn't need me anymore. So,
anyway. I don't remember that. And it's totally possible that it happened. There was a very brief time when I was giving violin lessons. And then I decided I wasn't great at it.
Okay, I'm not crazy.
But I don't remember offering it as like a silent auction item. But yeah, the violins, though, in the recording are not me.
Oh, well, it's not me either.
So. No, my partner.
And you should be thankful for that. Yes.
My partner, Sarah, is actually a really wonderful violinist, which is in some ways helped and in some ways hindered my reintroduction to the violin. I tucked my violin away for a good decade and barely ever played it once I started songwriting and playing the guitar. And so when we started seeing one another, she's just really incredible, I personally think. And so it made it it made it exciting. Like, oh, I know how to play this instrument. We should try it. But also just very apparent that I had lost it. But she did come up with some really wonderful string arrangements for the whole Game Changer album. You can hear her sprinkled all through there.
All right. We will hear your partner, Sarah, mm-hmm. and you in Game Changer.
I wanna be me, wanna be my truest self. I wanna work hard and play hard to get my fill. And I wanna see you in the afternoon light, with your doubts and your certainty. I am scared, but I am steady. I could love you if you are ready. Game changer, cling to me. Your lungs with gold. Scared, but I'm steady. I could love you if you are ready.
And that was the title track to Game Changer by our guest, Rachel Kilgore, with her partner, Sarah Pajanen, on violin. Rachel will take a break from rehabbing her house to perform at the Sacred Heart Music Center tomorrow, Saturday. And let's close out with one more that you sent us. Holy Are We? Want to tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. This is another one Sarah did some string arrangements for. And I just wanted to write a love song that was, I was really fortunate to be raised in a family that accepted my sexuality when I came out as a young person. And I wanted to write a song that was that kind of stood for that I guess was adamant that was okay, and because that's how I felt, and something that wove in the language of Christianity, which is something I'm familiar with. I wanted to capture that same-sex relationships can be quite beautiful, just like any other healthy relationship. And to celebrate it that way. So,
all right. We've been speaking with Rachel Kilgore, who is performing tomorrow night, Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. Masks are required, by the way, and if you can't do that, you can always watch online. It is available at sacredheartmusic.org. And you can also find Rachel Kilgore on YouTube by typing in Rachel Kilgore at YouTube. And we'll close out the segment with Holy Are We by Rachel Kilgore and Sarah Pajanen. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Holy are we, with her hand on my knee, and on you. Blessed her lips and the turn of her.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hey, Robin.
And Danny is joined by her two canines who have just completed a visit to the vet.
Georgie and Roxy, a mini Aussie and a Boston Terrier. I had to get them all their vaccinations today.
I wanted to give a proper introduction to them, just in case we hear from them later as you head back from the vet and stop to do our newscast. So, Brooks, going to you. Last week on the show, we heard from experts evaluating the new approaches to tourism that the cities of Duluth and Superior are taking, two very different approaches. Either way, it looks like the tourists have the message, even if those efforts haven't begun yet.
Yeah, whatever is being done has been working, because this year, Duluth tourism rebounded not only from 2020 levels, which, of course, with the pandemic in full swing, wasn't that hard to do, but it actually, the city picked up where 2019 left off. Hotel revenue actually jumped 20% from 2019 levels in July as prices rose and more people came up. And actually, there was a shortage of rooms because there's an ongoing staff shortage. So the supply and demand laws working in favor of hotel owners there saw a great deal more hotel revenue come in. And talking to owners and to restaurateurs around town, turns out, yeah, it's happening everywhere. You know, people are packing back in to shops, restaurants, bars, breweries, and hotels, especially for events like Grandma's, the Duluth Air Show. And now we're at the end of leaf season, so the crowds aren't thinning just yet.
Well, tourism may be booming, but that doesn't mean we have ever gotten an all clear or that it's completely safe to go outside yet. What's the regional COVID update?
Yeah, it's not looking great, you know, with folks not masking as much as they have been, of course, with recommendations to mask in public, whether you're vaccinated or not, but no requirements in most places. As well as a return to in-person school, COVID-19 cases are surging above where they were this time last year. And last week, in fact, 9% of all COVID-19 tests in St. Louis County came back positive. Now, that's almost twice the positivity rate that's considered a warning sign of high community transmission. So some new testing centers and ours have opened in Duluth. The DEC will now double in size to offer about 1,000 tests per day and will again be open on Saturdays from 11 to 6. Now, there is still testing at UWS, and there is testing on the Iron Range as well. Overall, you know, public health authorities are saying, please get vaccinated, please get tested, please stay home if you're feeling sick. We've heard this for the past 18 months, and on we go.
Danny, on the Wisconsin side, health officials are saying a little bit more than please get vaccinated, at least in Ashland County.
Yeah, there was a meeting of the joint and executive committees in Ashland County recently, and they were considering a proposal to create a $250 per month insurance penalty for county employees and their family members who aren't vaccinated. They decided to postpone that proposal or postpone taking it up, but the county was exploring increasing health premiums for people who are unvaccinated. But they got a lot of pushback from that idea. And even the head of the county's own health department, Terry Barningham, spoke out against that proposal. Even though she's a firm believer in vaccination, she voiced fears that staff would resign or retire if employees were charged more for their health insurance premiums, adding that they're having a difficult time keeping and recruiting staff because their wages aren't keeping pace with surrounding counties. And others spoke in support of the measure, including Ashland County Child Support Agency Director Kelly Madej. She urged the county to listen to the science, saying that voting down the proposal could lead to staff leaving the county over fear for their health. So she said it could go either way. On a separate note, the county board this week also approved $500 in COVID-19 hazard pay for essential workers through funding from the American Rescue Plan Act.
Well, back down to Superior, there are some serious discussions going on on a serious subject, ways to prevent something serious from happening.
Right. Yeah. The Superior School Board is set to take up a resolution that seeks to combat sex trafficking of youth. Laura Gapsky, who's on the school board and is also a chair of the city's Human Trafficking Commission, said at the board's committee of the whole meeting this week that this resolution seeks to raise awareness and prevent sex trafficking among students, while also urging the Wisconsin Association of School Boards and other districts and lawmakers to support these policies and programs and resources for school districts to address human trafficking of kids under 18. And she said she plans to lobby Milwaukee Senator Lena Taylor on a bill that was just recently revived in Wisconsin, which would bar charging minors with prostitution. Minnesota already has a similar law in place. It's known as the Safe Harbor Law. But the goal with this bill is to remove fears among youth that they'll be prosecuted for prostitution and encourage them to come forward and reveal the people who are soliciting them for sex in order to prevent trafficking. And supporters of the bill argue that it just makes sense because, you know, the age of consent in Wisconsin is 18. So minors can't legally consent to sex regardless of whether money was involved.
Right. And lastly, there are ongoing developments in the wolf hunt. What's the latest?
Well, the latest in this ongoing saga is that the Wisconsin DNR rejected the wolf hunt quota set by its own policy board. And they're cutting that quota by more than half to 130 wolves for the November hunt. You know, basically, this is what state wildlife managers originally proposed before the Natural Resources Board doubled that quota in August. And the DNR says that state law gives them the authority to make this call on the quota, but the move is pretty unprecedented. The agency is unaware of any other time in history where they've essentially defied the board's approval. And so it's kind of the latest in a power struggle between the agency under Democratic Governor Tony Evers and the conservative majority on the board, who were appointed by former Republican Governor Scott Walker. The board's chair, Fred Prain, disputes that the agency has final say over the quota, saying the DNR has pretty much gone rogue. But Hunter Nation, which sued to force a wolf hunt in February, says it also may take legal action once again over this decision. You know, they're saying that it's hunters' right under the law to harvest wolves and control their growing population. And they've pointed to conflicts with pets and livestock. But animal rights groups and tribes and researchers are objecting to the board's quota. They say it wasn't based on sound science. And right now there are two separate lawsuits to stop the hunt this fall, including one filed by six northern Wisconsin tribes. And a hearing has been set in that case for later this month.
All right. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News, who was joined by her two well-behaved canines, distant relatives of the aforementioned wolves. Thank you, Danny and Georgie and Roxy.
They just got all their vaccinations and their annual exams today, so glad to have that done and over with.
All right. And and Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team, without canine today. Thank you, Brooks.
No, unfortunately. Thank you so much, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior, how about we go from dogs to birds? We'll check in with a couple of local birders who will tell us what's happening up on Hawk Ridge and other hotspots for watching our feathered friends. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Rachel Kilgore. Stay safe, everyone.
I gave my love a cherry that had no stone. I gave my love a chicken that had no bone. I gave my love a story that had no end. I gave my love a baby with no